Hello, this is John Allsop, and welcome to your Internet Marketing 5 Day. First off is a quote from Anita Roddick. If companies are in business solely to make money, no consumer can fully trust what they do or say. And I guess the point is that we want to align with companies who have values similar to ours. If the relationship is simply I give you money and you do something for me, then if we don't know the higher values that a company's working to, we just have to assume that they are in business to make money, and so they will try and extract the highest price from us for the least work. I mean, that's the standard business default setting. So who would want to work with a company like that? Second thing is, I suppose the obvious unstated thing is that you should have a higher purpose. This is the reason for mission statements and the About Us page. What are you here for? Obviously, as a business, you need to be healthy and you need to make a profit in order to grow. And I'm certainly not against profit, but people need to know what you're trying to achieve, where you're trying to go with it. And if it's better service or whatever it is, that's great. So that people can buy into what you're doing. That all needs to be stated. Have a look at that side of things. Make sure that your values are aligned with what your customers want. Next thing is, now I keep referring to, actually, this is the last time I refer to it, but it's a research project. The link is on the Twitter feed. They looked at the influence of social media on traditional media, and they were able, one of the things that they got kind of, they didn't get excited about, but one of the things that seemed to have great influence was forums and community. So it's obviously much more influential if someone recommends a product to you than if the salesperson comes and tries to sell you something. The salesperson has something to gain, so they're less trustworthy, whereas your friend talking to you, they're your friend, you trust them. So, and if you go on a community site, like a forum, or, a group on Facebook or on LinkedIn or whatever, Mumsnet, all of that, you're there because you feel part of a community, and so those people on there are mostly people that you trust, otherwise you wouldn't be there. So what they were able to do in the research was strip out the effect of discussions within communities, and they were able to say that community, those discussions that were happening in forums and really outside your control, the peer-to-peer discussions that were happening that perhaps you don't even know about, caused half of their sales. And they were looking at, some kind of micro-loan organisation. So they tracked all of the sales that they got, and worked out that half of them came from community. That's very, very powerful in terms of us So in terms of marketing, what you could do is try to do things that are talkaboutable. Be noteworthy. It comes back to that thing. Be worth people's brain space. I looked at the ING website. I'm sure it's that. Is it ING? Yeah, ING. And it honestly took me... So, looking at it now, we've got the usual header, and then various things on the page move. And I had a real problem finding on this page where to log in. And yet, when I look at it, now I know where it is, it's blindingly obvious. And I put it up as an example, and somebody said, it's blindingly obvious. It's there where you'd expect it to be. But I think the reason is I was looking for a text link for login, and this is a button that's coloured in a shape that I didn't expect. It's in a different colour. My brain just cut it out, just didn't see it. And there was some research, I'm just trying to remember, there was some research about how men look for things in the kitchen cupboard and how women look for things in the kitchen cupboard. And it was something to do with shape recognition. And you know that thing where men look in a kitchen cupboard and don't see it, and it's because it's behind something, and the woman looks and spots it behind. And there was some conclusion about that, but I can't honestly remember what it was. But so it may be that. It may be just, you know, that I was expecting to see something different. But again, it just comes down to testing. And I think because it's ING, which is a savings company, they would expect you to be a frequent user. So they perhaps won't spot any problem with me and people turning up afresh, because, you know, 95% of their users are in there every week or whatever, transferring money and having a look around. You know, but there really was. I can't tell you how much I looked for the login. And the only way that you could spot that as a web designer is by usability testing, is by having someone sit there, hunt for the login while you watch. So usability testing finds that kind of thing out, and nothing else will. Now, there's a big kind of comeback, really, for GIFs. Now, when the web first started, I don't know whether this is true or not. Certainly when the web first started, you could use two different formats of image, either JPEGs or GIFs. And GIFs were seen really as slightly lower quality, because I don't know if it's they had fewer colours, I think, 256 colours, I think. But GIFs supported transparency, so you could have a logo and have the the coloured background of the website to show through where the logo wasn't, as it were. So we used GIFs early on, and one of the things that GIFs do is they allow animation. You can string GIFs together as if there were frames in a cartoon, and it just looks like an ordinary GIF, and it plays in any website because it's right back to the very beginnings of the web. I can't remember whether PNG was allowed in the early days, but PNG came out as a higher quality replacement for both of those. It was high quality, and it also supported transparency. And I think later on, isn't there a PNG animation? But anyway, the problem with that is PNGs are a bit bigger. Anyway, GIFs, you know, were this low quality. They were associated with that, you know, the early web where lots of moving icons and that kind of thing. You know, you look at a page and it was a real disgusting mess of moving icons, cartoony icons. That was all GIF stuff. So it kind of got out of fashion. But now, you know, they are low bandwidth. They're quick. They're an easy way of producing animations. And one thing that came out just recently, maybe a month or even longer ago, and I can't remember whether I put up a link on Twitter or not, but it was somebody had taken the output of a 3D camera, which takes two pictures from, you know, an eyeballs apart kind of lenses, and swapped them A B A B in a GIF animation, so that you weren't seeing the image in 3D, but you were alternating between the left and the right eye, and so you got a real sense. Your brain pieced it together. You know, you could see it was at that rate, A B A B A B. So it wasn't fooling you with speed, but it was, I mean, it looked really effective. So that was one way people are using animated GIFs. But now there seems to, I hope, after all this, that CinemaGram is using GIFs, otherwise I'll look very stupid. But anyway, I think it's part of the comeback of lightweight animation. So cinemagr.am, CinemaGram, seems to be a tool for helping you to create animations. And the different thing about them seems to be, just looking at it, seems to be that you can create zones. So you could have somebody stood on a street corner in still frame while the traffic whizzed past. So you could do all that kind of thing, put it on a web. It doesn't need flash or anything else, assuming it is GIF. That looked like a kind of groovy way to make something a little bit different. Finally, to be honest, I haven't used this a lot, but I do know it's there and I wanted to share it. There is this thing called Google's URL Builder, which allows you to add some parameters on the end of a URL, a web address, to say, all right, this has come from, or this visitor has come from this campaign, or has come from this place. And although you already know in analytics that someone's come from Twitter, what it allows you to do is split out your activities into different campaigns. But then the problem with the URL is it's too big. So then you want to shorten it. But also you can do things like, let's say johnalsop.co.uk/offer. And kind of track that back to a particular campaign. So just have a look at that. I'm still working on it. And some Andy Gambles, who's a kind of fellow internet marketer, has said that you can get, you can obviously get other domains as well, and use that to track campaigns. But anyway, the whole thing, that whole story is about measuring the efforts you make in a particular direction. So if you wanted to I suppose it's marketing tracking, isn't it? It's about, you're going to start a campaign and it's going to be about a particular aspect of one of your products, and you want to measure the whole campaign. So you can track everything back to a campaign and say, well, okay, we've spent all this money and time and this is what we got back from it. And literally you could go, here's all the traffic that came from that campaign and effort, and if you're selling things on the web, here's what we sold. So that's quite powerful compared to what people used to have to do with placing ads in magazines and trying to work out what they got back from it. Okay, so that's it. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.